Welcome to the Recreation Committee on Monday, March the 1st, 8:30 a.m. We are starting on time. Thanks for everybody to be here so we can hopefully keep everybody up over the day. Item number one is called order, which I just did. Item number two is the approval of the minutes from February 1st, 2021 meeting.
So moved.
Second.
All right, do we have any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
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 All opposed? Ayes have it. Public comments, we have a public comment period, so anybody with any comments that would like to come up to the podium, give your name and address for the record. We'll give you a couple of minutes to speak. Do you have anybody that wants to speak? I know we had Greer with the lacrosse wanted to be here, but he was out of town yesterday in a tournament with his son was in a tournament, so he called me just now and said he wasn't going to be able to make it. So unfortunately, he's not. So has anybody got anything they'd like to say? All right, then we will move on.
Yeah, same place I did.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Name and address for the record, sir.
James Rivers, 1553 Oldenburg Drive, up in Allendale. Sent a letter off a little bit later last week to kind of talk about growing the youth softball program and trying to get it kind of an intermediate level worth of play. So currently, I believe there's about six 10U teams, which equates to about 80 players, which is phenomenal. I continue to see that level grow, but what happens is typically at the 10U level, those girls that are looking for more intermediate play grow, leave the town of Mount Pleasant because there's currently no intermediate level of play at the town. So we also, I don't know if you guys had a chance to read my letter or kind of go through it. I'd love to kind of deep dive into this and kind of make it make the program better. I'm pretty passionate about the recreational softball team. I currently coach two daughters through the softball team and have for several years now. But with the town of three high schools now, you're going to be looking at about 75 players that are going to have to be sustained through that town, and the way we do that is we're going to have a higher level of play. You currently have girls that are traveling to Monk's Corner, Charleston, Somerville, and even Beaufort and Columbia for those higher levels of play because there isn't currently any in the town of Mount Pleasant. So that's kind of what I'd like to discuss or talk about.
All right. Well, yeah, we read your letter, and I appreciate meeting with you and the other gentleman we met with. And I've talked to our staff. Jimmy, maybe if you'd like to get up and address our current status, or Steve, I'm sorry, okay. Steve. I didn't know if whoever you want is on your team to get up and maybe talk about it a little bit because we're starting to hear more and more. Greer could not be here today, and he was very supportive of it for lacrosse. I know, but... if you want to get up and maybe talk about it a little bit, what we're doing now, and then we can have a discussion with the committee.
Gary, would that fall under item number four?
Yes, that will be. That will be. That's right. So, okay, we're good. So we'll move on to item number four, unless there's anybody else that wants to get up and speak. All right. So now we're on item number four. So item number four is discussion regarding the future of public recreation in Mount Pleasant. And this certainly has a part of that. So Steve, we'll turn it over to you.
Okay. Good morning, councilmen, members of the committee. Good to kick off the March. We are, as you know, we discussed this, the vision of the recreation department at the council retreat. And taking the feedback that we had from the council retreat, we're looking to diversify some of our programs. Some of the input that we received from council was diversifying on some of our programs and putting a little bit more focus in particularly in two particular areas was expansion in teen programs. There was a lot of discussion about how there were a lot of things going on and a lot of activities for our youth, our younger youth, and then certainly as adults and seniors, we provide quite a bit. But in our teen area, there's much less that is offered for them. And so a diversification, expanding in that area. And we recently just met with the youth council. We just met with the youth council last month. Had some very, very good dialogue with them and some good feedback from them, and presented them with a few ideas of things that we thought that might be of interest to them in their areas, and also received feedback from them on other ideas. And some areas that kind of floated to the top was there was a lot of interest in activities such as esports. There was open gym nights, providing nights where the teens, where it's teen-only open gym night. You know, we have open gyms all the time, but where there's a time where it's kind of a teen-only open gym nights. Also, co-ed athletic social leagues seem to be of a great interest. And one thing that I think we've tried that before, but one thing that was really good feedback that we got from them was kind of splitting that age group. You know, where we have teens, but there's quite a difference between our 12 and 13 year olds on the bottom and our 16 and 17 year olds. And splitting that, where you have maybe 12, 13, 14 age groups, and then you have 15, 16, 17 age groups. So I thought that was very useful feedback. But then there's also, on those social leagues, those are activities where they could come out and, you know, they're not trying to get a scholarship, they're not trying to get a sponsor or anything like that. It's to come out, co-ed, social leagues, you're enjoying it with your friends. It might be the art club or the geometry club at school might just put a team together and come out and play kickball or play volleyball or play dodgeball or, you know, social leagues along those lines at our facilities. We also talked about some of the existing programs that we do are of interest to them, but they're not offered specifically for them. You know, culinary arts, music, painting classes, dance classes, maybe even some of our exercise classes, you know, whereas a teenager might be interested in attending some of those things, but when they go to them and everybody is in their 40s and 50s, when they go to a painting class, they just feel out of place. But where we set it up for that age group, it could be a really fun social event for them. So some very good feedback from them. And then we also talked about, they provided good input about promoting it through the schools a little bit more. You know, we have our avenues that we communicate kind of in the adult world, but there's other ways in other aspects of social media, but then through the schools, and we would like to extend or communicate with the schools to see if we can work with them to be able to put stuff on their school newspaper and that sort of thing to let people know what's going on in the community for that age group. The other area of expansion we looked at was continued expansion in the public art area, and doing more in that area. We currently and continuing on with a lot of things that we're doing, such as our murals, our traffic boxes, the Oyster Shell Initiative, but more of the things that we recently started doing, I guess kind of partly because of COVID, we started expanding a few different things, such as the performances and musical performances or shows on the lawn type of thing, and doing that more frequently. And also instructional classes. More art-related instructional classes for our population. So those are some of the feedback, and we're looking to move forward in those areas. And I think we have a good footing on which direction to go on that. So,
if I may, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, good morning. Thank you, Steve. By the way, attending that youth council meeting, the members of the youth council. Extraordinarily impressive. The breadth of perspective that they expressed was really something. But we asked for this item to be on the agenda. It's something we've been talking about for a while. We received good feedback from you and members of council at the retreat with regard to programs and a need for expansion of programs and greater diversity, greater socialization opportunities, some more for the arts. So we brought this forward with you today to say this is what we've heard, this is the feedback we've gotten, and we'd like to begin, if you're comfortable with it, we'd like to begin crafting what this might look like going forward. And so with your blessing, we didn't want to move forward and do that without your blessing. But if this sounds about right to you, allow us maybe 30, 60 days or so to start crafting some of this and bring it back to you to get your opinion.
Thank you, Eric. Thank you, Steve. Those are all great things. I think one of the main issues now, as you know, that are out there are travel teams. For those of us who were here back in the 90s, we had Hungry Neck Soccer, which was run by the town. I think Christy was the one that was head of it at the time. And they practiced here over at Patriots Point, and they traveled, and they also had tournaments here. That seemed to go real well until it broke up, and all of a sudden it started getting subbed out to somebody else, like Scump or one of these other ones. It wasn't our full program that we ran with our people. We let somebody else kind of run it, and I don't have to tell you, you know the issues that we came up with that. So I think the question here is, we're doing a great job with all the things that y'all mentioned. There's no doubt about it. I came out here yesterday and just walked the field over here, and I saw Moultrie's girls practicing lacrosse. I thought that was great. I was watching them run relays, and man, they were fast. I mean, they really looked like they were doing great. So you had another smaller team practicing lacrosse out there as well. So definitely, you know, we have our citizens out there utilizing our facilities, which is fantastic. I love to see them out there exercising and working. But there's a push now by some of the folks to be able to do some tournaments and travel tournaments. And as you know, we talked about lacrosse, so we have a lacrosse tournament coming up. That's going to be a good thing to be able to monitor to see how well that works. I talked to one of the restaurant owners, and he was telling me he makes 10% of his revenue is during the season when Denton's has their baseball games and stuff out there. So certainly there's money coming into the area when we do have travel people visit us, but I think we have more and more parents that want to be able to have, you know, a tournament here so they don't have to travel every weekend, because it seems like they're on the road every weekend going to this place or that place to be able to for their kids to play. And so I think the idea would be, you know, once in a while have a tournament here so that we can have people come in. You know, every store I go to, a restaurant I talk to, they love the idea because that's revenue for them, absolutely. And they come in on the weekend and they leave on the weekend, so they're gone during the week. So that's something I also would like for y'all to take a look at to see if there's an opportunity to do it. Like I said, we already got lacrosse set up, and that's going to be something that we can monitor very carefully to see how that works. And you know, they send the letters out. He was telling us, he's telling people to stay in Mount Pleasant. I mean, you can't force them, but he says when they go places and they stay where they're told to stay, and most people do. So if that's the case, our restaurants, I mean, our hotels will certainly book up. The restaurants, you know, will you know, be able to make additional revenue as well as other stores. And so I just want to take a look at it and see, because we're hearing more and more from our citizens that the kids who are in the higher league of their sport want to be able to have a tournament here once in a while rather than traveling every weekend to go somewhere else to play a tournament, whether it's Hanahan or Charleston. I forgot where he told me he was at, but it was out of this area here. Just to see if we can do it, if we have the facilities, if we have the time, the opportunity. And so it would be letting our citizens play home once in a while instead of constantly having to travel. Mm-hmm. So I'll open it up to the committee. If you guys want to say anything?
Yeah, Gary, thank you. Those are great points, and I agree with that. Going back to kind of some of the things the youth council said, you said e-sports. What does that mean?
Yeah, esports are actually becoming very popular in recreation. I know Florence has moved forward with it quite a bit. It's competition. It's competition in gaming. It's gaming competition.
When you say gaming, you're talking about video.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I didn't know what was going on there.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm glad you asked. Give me a chance to clarify that. But that is video gaming, where you have a facility, a place where people come together. They actually form teams. They compete online against other places. And it is really taking off in the industry. I've heard that. I went to a trends conference last year, and there was some discussion about that. And so we've sent some, we've been in communication with Florence and how they do it. The biggest obstacle in that is the equipment, you know, the cost, the outlay for cost for equipment. It's not just normal computers. I mean, it's kind of your higher speed computers and that sort of thing. But more so the space. You have to have a dedicated space. It can't, you know, it's not a room where, oh, we're going to use this program room and just come in and bring in the computers and then you take them out. So you kind of need to dedicate a space to be able to do something like that.
Well, but it is. So I guess the benefit would just be, and obviously there's not the wanted exercise component, right, that I would love to have in a recreation program, but I guess it's just a social, since you're bringing them together instead of them all playing at home by themselves, I guess.
It is, and it's involvement in the recreation department. It's getting to the social aspect. Florence has even said that, and I agree with you completely. Initially, it kind of pulls at me a little bit the wrong way to encourage, you know, to be going, encouraging people to play more video games, where I'd love to see them out and being more active, which is by nature what we always try to encourage. But they have said that, you know, there's the teamwork, there's the socialization, there's the, you know, getting together, and they have said that bringing them into the recreation department, that they've seen a bleed off of that of, oh, well, they come in and then they find out about other things going on in the recreation department, and they might be involved in swimming or something else that they get exposed to while they're there. Anyway, it does seem to be an upward trend in the recreation areas.
Okay. I thought some of the other ideas were great. The open gyms for teens only. I know when we have like open gyms over here, you know, you'll have a range from kids my kids' age to grown men. And so, you know, letting the teenagers actually have a specified time every now and then at night, I think is a really great idea. And then, you know, the art-related instructional classes, I think, are also a great idea. So I'm really excited and looking forward to kind of seeing what you guys bring back in the next month or two related to this. Along those same lines of the social, somebody asked me about this the other day, and I was thinking it wasn't going to happen. But now with the governor getting rid of his last legal restrictions, I think we should put on a sock hop for the kids. I know this year's fifth graders haven't got to experience that at all. Last year's fifth graders got to do it for at least half the year. So anyway, somebody asked me about that, and I think that's a good idea. Know what other people think about that. And then I had a couple questions about softball. One thing, so we are building two regulation youth softball fields as part of the Carolina Park last phase, I guess, correct?
That is correct, in Carolina Park Phase 3, although funding will probably not permit to do both of those fields. It'll probably be one of those fields, one of those two fields.
Okay. Thank you for your letter, Mr. James. Is there anything that can be done in the meantime to make, I don't know if there's some sort of temporary fencing or something that can be put up so that way, I mean, literally my best sports memory as a kid was when I hit my first home run when I was 11 at the Duffy Complex. And I can't imagine being 11 years old and playing on like a huge field. I mean, is there anything that can be done so that way we can make it feel more youth softball regulation like?
Absolutely, and that's a very good question. And yes, there is. There's a product called SportaFence. Actually, there's all kinds of temporary fencing you can use. The good thing about a particular product that we are looking into, a temporary fencing, is the ease with which it can be brought out and put back. And it's significant fencing. It's not putting up stakes in the ground and orange fencing or something like that. It's real fencing. I've discussed that with Councilman Santos, and we have looked into it and have included that in our budget for next year.
Awesome.
To be able to get that, where we could use that on one of our softball fields, our existing softball fields. And you're absolutely right. And we've recognized that for years, that, you know, we have these girls softball and women softball, and just not going to be hitting it over the 300-foot plus fence, you know. You know, the ball just rolls out there a long way, but to be able to knock it over the fence and hit a home run like you would in regulation softball is extremely advantageous. It adds a great deal to the sport. To give them the proper type of place to play. And we envision being able to use that on the field at the Jones Center, where they could use that, put in the outfield of the Jones Center and be able to use that in that location. But yes, we are going to be building the fields at Carolina Park, but it's going to take a little while for that to happen. That won't be completed until probably summer next year. And, you know, depending on how long it takes grass to grow and get seeded, it probably wouldn't be put into play until the fall of 2022.
And pardon my ignorance, does softball have the same season as baseball? I mean, is it spring?
We
typically
we play in the spring and in the fall.
In the fall, okay.
Right.
And also, Jake, that fence can be broken up into pieces. So, for instance, we can use it for Children's Day. We could put it on the back of one of our trucks and move it up to anywhere we wanted to do, and we could use it for the Cooper River Bridge Run. We could use it for a lot of things. So it's movable, and when you hook it up, they pull it out and into the field. That's field two, I think, at Jones Center, or field mm-hmm. three. See, the key is that field doesn't have a rubber, which is what you need for a softball. And because the other ones that they play on have rubbers, and that's not...
Like the mound, you mean?
Yeah, mound. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Right.
So this one field doesn't have them, and that's the one we use a lot for it. And that's where we're going to put it out there, on that one field that doesn't use it. But we can move that thing anywhere for any time. So it doesn't have to be just for softball. Softball season is over, and we're having some other function. Children's Day Festival, whatever. We can always move that fence out there and do whatever we want with it. So it's going to be, it's a versatile fence. I really like it. I thought it was really good. So it can be used for other things when we're not using it for softball as well.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Jim?
I just want to fill you guys in a little bit on, so after our retreat where we kind of talk through like the recreation futures and I mentioned the youth council being a good resource. I actually went to the next youth council meeting and spoke at public comment and asked them if they would put it on their agenda, which they did for the next month. And I'm so thankful to you, Steve, for following up and kind of making it into a robust discussion with the youth council. And I'm really grateful for what they came back with. I think that the esports thing is really interesting to me because it's not only it's not only something that can be socially done in a space, it also can be streamed. And this has become like, I don't know, I read an article about this. This has become like a huge industry. Like people are, you know, you joke like, oh, my kid's never going to make a living playing video games. Like, oh, no, this is like sports tournaments. There are millions and millions of billions of dollars going to like this industry and like tournaments and winning prizes. And people have Twitch streams, which are these like live streams of the games that they do. And tons of people watch them. So you could imagine that a Mount Pleasant tournament of esports could have an audience of thousands just watching from home and those kinds of things. And then that being a draw into the rec department and you know, you could even throw in like little commercials in there for the rec department and the different youth activities that you have. So, but I see the problem of the initial investment and potentially having to have a dedicated space. But it's something I think that would also appeal to like a different segment of the youth that maybe don't have, you know, that aren't the sporty kids and aren't the artsy kids, but are the video game kids. And that seems to be like a legitimate path for a lot of people. Sure. These days is that. So I'm hoping I'll make it to another youth council meeting and thank them for what they've done. But I think it is so great that we have that resource to rely on to give us the word straight from the teens' mouths of what they're. I really like the idea of splitting the age groups as well. I have a tween daughter, and I wouldn't want her at at almost 13 to be at an event with 17-year-old. You know, I think that there's
a big difference.
There's a big difference in maturity level and, you know, things that they want.
Size and everything.
Yeah, exactly. So I really like that as well. And I do think that if there's a way to expand our offerings in the softball realm, I think that providing a smooth path from Mount Pleasant Rec into high school sports is actually, you know, one of the things that it should be a mission of what we're doing, no matter what the sport. So, but thank you, Steve, for all your work on this.
You're welcome. Thank you.
That's true. In fact, actually, the first youth council we did was really pretty much responsible for getting the skateboard park there. We took on the skateboard park issue because kids were getting run off of private property. It was a big deal back in those days, and we were able to get me and Ted Summerford went and visited Seacoast, and they donated $5,000 to the park, and we were able to build a nice park for them. So, you know, there's a lot of good things can come out of the youth council. So I'm looking forward to seeing what this youth council brings forward. So anyway, I think going back to talking about, you know, the travel ball, we've talked about that a little bit more, and I think we need to keep the discussion going to see how we can do it, if we can do it, and hosting teams here. I think the lacrosse tournament that we have coming up will be a kind of a litmus test to see if it works for us, how we do it, and same with the half marathon. You know, we're going to have you're going to give a little report in a little bit about the half marathon, but still we're going to have a lot of people coming in for that half marathon as well. We just need to see how that works. I mean, whether it's works for us, whether the businesses and the citizens are good with this or not, but certainly it's growing, and I've seen the travel team. The original travel team was very successful and went on, and unfortunately, you know, it kind of dwarfed into something else once we let outside people run it for us. But I think if we do it, it needs to be run by our staff. It needs to be handled by the town of Mount Pleasant, you know, and then to make sure that, you know, they're up to our standards and doing what we want them to do. I'm not in favor of subbing it out to anybody, but it needs to be under our direction if we decide to do something like that. So I think we need to continue the discussion about it to see. Softball, one of the issues with softball is the amount of kids that play. And if you want somebody to get up and talk about that a little bit, so staff will understand some of our conversations that we had. I don't want to say something and be wrong.
Actually, I can address that.
Okay, if you will, further. Yes.
Yeah, certainly any of our sports, we love to continue to grow the participation and the skill level that's provided for our residents. And softball is growing tremendously. We have 78 players signed up this year in the 10U category, whereas just 3 years ago, it was 28 players. So we've gone from 28 to 44 to 69 to 78. I mean, there's clearly a trend there with it increasing significantly. Our other age groups are not quite as many participants, but they're increasing as well. We are, like in all of our other sports, we are open to, and we would like to be able to offer all-stars in each one of these sports. So if in the season, you'd be able to have an all-star team. The main challenge that we found in all-stars with softball is you have an all-star team to play other all-star teams. And there are not, most of the other areas are not, you have to have somebody to play. You have to have somebody to be able to play. And you have to have enough people in a league to be able to create an all-star team.
So I know in baseball there's Little League and Dixie and Babe Ruth. Is there a similar thing in softball? And do we belong to one of those?
Let me ask Scott on this. Is Scott Coth here on that?
He's not here, but okay. We do the equivalent of Dixie baseball in softball. I believe it's called Dixie Girls. That's the organization we fall under.
So do they have a South Carolina tournament each year? And then you go on, if you win the South Carolina, it's the same deal. You go on to the next regional or World Series or whatever?
Yeah, it's under SCAP, which is our governing body, the recreation department.
Right.
And that's the all-star team Steve's speaking about. It would be the organization we'd fall under to participate in all-stars.
Right, in All-Stars, they have a 10U, they have a 12U, and 14U in SCAP All-Stars. We would be able to put together a team to be able to play in the 10U. We don't even offer a 14U right now because there's just not enough players. We have a 16U, so it's actually 13, 14, 15, and 16.
Does North Charleston and some of the, do they have this same issue? So I feel like there's an avenue there between the Charleston regional area. Goose Creek has a team. If Somerville has a team, if North Charleston has a team, even if we only have, can only recruit one team, even if only a couple of those do it, even if it's just North Charleston, Sea of Charleston, and Mount Pleasant, you could play those two teams. I mean, just to get, you know, have some sort of offering there, I think would be advantageous, and I think something that we could work out a good partnership with the other cities. So I just think we need to think outside the box a little bit to make it work.
I recognize the point, and I agree. If we can play some of those other teams, that's what we would want to be able to do, is play some of the teams from the other areas. I would need to look into it more. I believe that most of those areas, they are accommodating travel teams, but I don't believe that those recreation departments have their own travel team, that is the Charleston travel team, the North Charleston travel team. I may be wrong on that. I'd need to look into that more, but I believe that they are accommodating travel teams in those areas.
Yeah, because I know some of them, Hanahan's got a team as well. I mean, a lot of them out there have these teams. But it seems to me, just listening to what we're talking about, we don't have as many kids at that age to be able to play that age. Because then you go into middle school or high school, and what are they, 14 when they're going into freshman in high school or so? So now they'll be playing for them. But the kids that don't make that team should have a team to follow on with the rec department, in my opinion, to be able to play some good teams. And that's how you get better. You don't get better playing teams that are worse than you. You get better playing teams that are better than you. And that's what I'd like to see them doing, you know.
If I can add on, so regarding, so that is the other direction we would like to be able to go, is to be able to add middle school teams. It's been very successful with basketball and with what we've done with football and those in other sports, and we would love to be able to do that. Softball is challenging. For example, right now we have 18 people signed up at Curio. We could put together a Curio team. It'd be great. You know, wouldn't it be a problem? There's only 7 signed up for Lane. They couldn't field a team. Moultrie has 13, which would be right on the border of having enough, you know, to field a team to be able to play. But also what is a challenge in softball is you need to have some pitchers, pitchers specifically. It's a fast pitch game for girls softball, and having the pitchers in there and be able to be trained and be able to competitively play. So right now we take all three of those together and we put together teams that are somewhat even, rather than having one team that may have all the pitching skill on it that blast the other ones. We do our best to make the teams as even as possible. But certainly in some of the other sports, when the numbers are higher, when there's more people to play, we can field teams from each school, and that would be a goal. And I think that's a good direction to go in that area if we can continue to build those numbers. And hopefully those younger age groups can continue to, you know, they've just a few years ago, we only had 26, 28 people playing in the younger age group. Now we've got 78. I'm expecting those to build up into the higher age groups as well, especially if we provide a field where they can hit it over the fence.
Yeah, we got a fence now coming. It's good.
So Mr. Chairman, I think,
yes, sir,
what we're hearing is there's a desire to accommodate increased competition with softball, whether it's tournaments or more opportunities. And so we can incorporate that into some of the other things we discussed today.
Right. That'd be great. Oh,
bring back a plan.
Even if we hosted one here, I mean, I don't know that we have the fields to do that because we don't have many softball fields, I don't think, but be nice to host it right here if we could.
Sure.
And we are doing many things. We are working with the high schools. We are working with the coaches at the high schools to offer coaches clinics, to offer player clinics, offer pitching clinics. We have instructional softball to help build, you know, skills development in softball. There are other things that we are doing currently, and we'll continue to expand upon those.
Well, I know the Wando coach, she did the Team USA. I went out to that, watched them. That was awesome, you know, watching those girls. Those were the best of the best that were trying out with Team USA, and they were awesome to watch. So I think if we can get our high school coaches more involved, putting on clinics and things like that, you know, the better. I know when we did middle school football, you know, I took my kids, most of my kids went to Bishop England because they came from Christ our King. We would go over there on Sunday and practice at Bishop England's field, and coach would come out and bring a couple of his players and go over some of their plays, and we'd learn their plays. And I know Coach Hayes was always open to doing the same thing for any of the public school kids. He would come out there and you know, go over plays of what Wando does. So I think getting the high schools involved as well with these kids at that age, that next year will be up in high school, really made a big difference for my team. I know that for sure. But anyhow, Jimmy knows that. Jimmy was one of the first, I think, state championship here, huh? Was that 13, 14? Yeah, so, and those kids went on to play at Wando and did real well. So, all right, Jake?
I was just going to say, on the travel team subject, I mean, not just talking about softball, but any sport, and as a parent who now, my son isn't playing any rec sports. I think the challenge is really coaching. When we do recreation sports, I mean, I've coached a soccer team before. I've never played soccer, but we got an email saying, this is your team. Nobody stepped forward to coach. Like three of them went by and they were like, no one steps forward. There's not going to be a team. And I'm like, finally, I'll do it. I mean, the referee literally had to like explain to me what offsides was in the first game. That's like, and so really, I think the reason people don't want to travel, and a lot of people don't want to travel and do all that stuff, is not even necessarily about the competition and games and stuff. It's really about the coaching. And I don't know that there's an answer to that question, because we have so many rec sports and so many teams, we can't go out and recruit and pay a bunch of coaches. I just don't know if there's some sort of middle ground in some of these sports. I know soccer, you can do recreation soccer, and then there is, I think it's called developmental, and there's
challenger.
Like, which is like a more, anyway, and they do play the travel teams, and gosh, they beat a lot of the travel teams, the organized big money travel teams, which is super cool. And it's at an affordable price, and they get great coaching. It's not just some random dad who may be great or may not be any good. And so anyway, at least in some of the major sports, you know, we have it in soccer. You know, I don't know about, I know baseball is really, the travel teams are really eaten into even our regular Dixie and recreation competition, basketball. So anyway, I just think it's important to recognize that is the real reason, and it's a hard thing to overcome. It's like this, the travel team will say, oh, our coach played 4 years of D1 soccer and they're going to get the best training possible versus, you know,
well, I can play. I can remember when you were 5 years old and I coached my first soccer.
I had the worst coach when I was 5 years old.
Did you?
That's why I quit soccer.
But we went undefeated that year. We went undefeated. So yeah, his first year playing at five, I got pulled into coaching. I had to get somebody to sit down and draw out what a soccer field was and where people could play and what line they couldn't cross. And I had no idea what soccer was, but we were big on fitness. We were big on getting these guys ready, and we went undefeated that year. So it can work out. You don't need professional coaches out there. You just need dedicated coaches.
You do, but that is, I think that's the biggest reason people choose to do that, and I don't really know what the answer is to that. But
so we will keep studying it. I think, Eric, that was, you know, a good comment that you made.
Yeah, we plan to bring back at the time sort of a package of ideas to meet direction.
Great.
We'll present them to you at that time.
I think that's a good idea. I appreciate that. Committee, y'all feel the same way? All right. All right, so we'll move on. If nobody has anything else to say, we'll move on to item number 5, program update. Steve?
Here we go. And our program update, I'll go over a few things real quick. Today is the first day of registration for camps. Summer camps open up this morning, 8 o'clock, it's a busy day. I can promise you, the Jones Center and online, and everybody is behind the scenes right now. Things are clicking. And it's a very, very busy day, and we're excited about it. We have a great, great list of summer camps available for the public, both spring break and summer. And so be interesting to see how the registration all goes today. I'm expecting, you know, big numbers as we have in the past. So we're very excited about it and moving forward with that. We have the half marathon. I wanted to give a little update on the Sweetgrass half marathon. It's May 22nd, and we opened it up 2 weeks ago, and we already have over 200. By the way, we're capping the event at 500 runners. We're capping the event at 500 runners this first time to make sure we do it well and can handle it and can handle the crowds and everything else. But 200 runners have signed up already, 210 or 15 or something like that, as of Friday. So maybe higher than that now. So it's going very, very well. Very excited about it. I think it's going to be a good event, a new event here in the town. And I think we're seeing that it's going to have some staying power, if we're able to put on a good show for them. And we will, I promise. I wanted to give you an update of Memorial Waterfront Park and some information when what's happening over there with our First Responders Monument. The First Responders Monument, as you can see here, this is kind of over near, I think most of you are familiar with this. We've kind of reviewed it before, but I have a little bit more information. So over here is the Veterans Memorial. I was going to say War Memorial. Veterans Memorial is right over here in this area. And just behind it over here, by this, between the sidewalks, this is where the First Responders Monument will be. You know, picture here. It'll be in the center of it. It won't be looking like a drone or something like this guy here, but it's going to be imitating the diamonds on the bridge, with a beautiful bell in the center up on a pedestal, just to kind of give you the height so you can see about the size of it. It's a large bell. The bell will look something. This is the type of bell. It's not going to say whatever this bell says on this is off of a church somewhere else, but this is what the bell will look like. And on one side, it will have the town logo with 2021 when it's going to be dedicated. And on the other side, it'll have the saying, there is no greater calling than to serve others. Listed on there. And so this is a dedication to the first responders, both in public service, fire, and police, that are serving this community. And I think it's going to really be a beautiful location. Going back to that first slide, I can go back here. What you'll be able to see is the bell will be right here. It will be in the center of the new area. There'll be a seating wall going around it. The sidewalk comes in, and there are some little planters that'll be going around the bell here with some decorative flowers, and it will be uplit to light the bell in the evening. Should be a really beautiful addition to Waterfront Park.
I have a quick question.
Yes, ma'am.
Is the bell a functioning bell?
It is a functioning bell. There's not a gong underneath it. It'll be with a hammer. Tapped with a hammer.
Okay.
So when we have a function, we would come out. It will not just be there.
Yeah, kids can't run up.
That's what I was wanting to make sure of. There'll be lots of kids at the park, and we don't want them shoving the bell.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, I was mentioning if it was like swaying like this, that it would be a potential hazard for the kids.
No, it will not swing. But we were concerned just because the way it looks, I was like, Is it still going to sound nice because you have this thing? But yes, this is a bell foundry that's actually they are giving us. I could even let you hear what it's going to sound like. They give us it's tuned perfectly and it's beautiful, and it'll be very, very nice.
Thank you.
Well, also as an update to that, and I'm not at liberty to go into it deeply, but I talked to somebody last week that's offered to donate $10,000 to put up a flagpole, like the one we just put at our brand new fire station. It's a large flagpole, goes up, you'll be able to see it from the water. But anyhow, I'm gonna be meeting with him this week, and That'd be fantastic if we were able to do that, because then we could have it at the Veterans, right by the Veterans Memorial and our memorial. So hopefully that'll work out.
Yeah, that would be beautiful at the location.
Yeah.
Another question about Waterfront Park. It's been now maybe 3, 4, 5 months since we really talked about it, and we were looking at all the different options and ideas, and I know we had a number of questions about some things and pricing as to if we could include some more playground equipment, if we couldn't. I know I had some pricing concerns as far as the ongoing maintenance of like a splash pad, like how much does that cost us every year moving forward, things like that. So I just kind of want to see where we are on making those decisions. I know you said they were kind of working on an updated layout with the features that we had chosen, but I don't even know that I necessarily feel like all the features are 100% solid yet. So anyway, I just kind of wanted to see where we were with that.
Well, I believe those things are going to be pretty solid. I mean, obviously when it all comes to getting put up for bid and we see where everything, you know, falls, what we're able to fund, but our expectation is to be able to fund the items that we selected on there. And that project has been sent to SCDOT. We've gotten an initial review from SCDOT, a very initial review, being we don't see, the answer was basically we don't see any, envision any problems with this. It needs to go through further review. And it also is going to have a review from the Federal Highway Administration, which was a surprise to me. I didn't know that they would need to get involved, but that it'll be a second level review as well.
So we're kind of on a holding pattern, then. We don't really want to put any more time and money into it until we definitely have that DOT.
Well, that is correct. Yeah. Okay. So we have not, full design is not being even initiated. Bid design, you know, where all the specs is not even being initiated until we have the full approval. And then, yes, we know we can move forward with that. We did get information back from SCDOT after receiving it and getting a review, they did not indicate any major issues with the design or any concerns, and that it just has to continue on with the review process.
And we don't necessarily have a timeline for how long that'll take.
We do not at this point. We do not have once that is completed, then we will go into the full design to put together all the details of it to be able to be put out and bid and awarded for construction.
Okay.
So you're talking about the whole phase three?
Yes, that's the rest of phase three. That's right now the first responders monument is a portion of phase three that we're able to implement now. We're able to jump on it, but you know, the rest of the design for everything else over there is under review by the SCDOT.
Well, I think the big issue is them having access to the bridge, and we've done that. We're making sure we're not blocking any way to the bridge. So I know that was a big concern, so I think we've kind of already met that. Okay, anything else?
Mm-mm.
All right, guys. We stand adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.